up.
This is SB Nation AM.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Hey, glad you could be with us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. It is a Thursday. It is Throwback Thursday, and we are going to 1983, doing a little pop culture this morning, because on this date, the A-Team debuted on television with Mr. T and George Peppard. If you grew up in the 80s, early 80s especially, this was a show. This had toys and everything. It was just a lot of fun. 1983 on Throwback Thursday. Coming up later in this hour, Ryan Ballingy, a fantastic guest, really good stuff, talking some golf. Now, the PGA Tour is underway, and they had two events in Hawaii, but I'll be honest with you. I think the sport just takes off and really kicks off when they get to California. They do the Hawaii thing and then they get to California. Whether it's Riviera, whether it's Torrey Pines, which is where they're at this week for the Farmers Insurance Open. It's when a lot of guys make their season debut. Phil Mickelson, Tiger Woods, Jordan Spieth. It's a very, very good field, but it does kick off the season. And a lot of eyes are on Tiger Woods. And isn't it great if you follow golf just on the outside looking in, you're not deep, deep into it. Isn't it great that Tiger is still relevant just until he isn't later down the road? There was a time where Tiger just wasn't in the conversation on anything. And now he's looking for his 83rd win, or he has a good shot at Torrey Pines where he's won before, and looking ahead to defend his Masters championship. We have Tiger back in the sport. We have Phil at 49 years old, as fit as ever, and can still play with the young guns. And whatever happened to the young guns? We'll get to Ryan Ballingy coming up later in the show. We'll also talk about the Big 12. It's handed down the suspensions in that Kansas-Kansas State brawl from Tuesday night. Silvio D'Souza got 12 games. Well, should Bill Self give him more? We're going to talk about that coming up. And Eli Manning announcing his retirement after 16 years. Even if he feels he could still play, even if he feels he could still win games, he wanted to go out a giant. He didn't want to leave playing one or two years with some other team in another uniform. Did you like that? Or do you think he still should be out there as long as he possibly can? I kind of like the idea of going out on a giant, even if it's a little earlier than he probably would have liked. SB Nation AM on SB Nation Radio on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's on SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. We celebrate the television shows of 1983. On this date, A-Team debuted on television with Mr. T, B.A. Baracus, George Peppard as Hannibal, and Dirk Benedict, I think, was Face?
Yes.
I forgot who played Murdoch on that show back in the day.
I
know
did.
Those three.
And then they changed to midway.
Yeah,
wasn't a different actor
might,
that came in?
It might have been. You might have been right. Now, this TV show was...
Chips. Crime fighting done by actual crime fighters.
That was still on the air in 1983, huh?
Yep.
Wow, when I thought that was debuted, a late 70s show.
Well, this was ending as A-Team was taking over for
All
Southern
right.
California. So
Chips
was done in California. A-Team took over.
Was that a cool thing to be back in the day, a L.A.
No
motorcycle
idea.
Cop?
I don't think anyone knew. I think it became cool.
Yeah, it became cool. That'd be neat.
But
cops on motorcycles?
Cops on motorcycles.
Solving crime. I saw the actor that played their chief. Remember their boss?
Okay, yeah.
And I saw him in something. He's older now, obviously, much older. But I saw him and I went, I think that's the guy. So I like IDBM'd him and stuff. And I was like, oh, sure enough, it is. And I was like, wow, that must be cool. When you're an actor, you're like on these hit shows, then you disappear, then you come back, and then you're still in the game. It's not like football. Like, we're talking about Eli Manning, and it's like, 38, that's it. You're done. But in acting, if you need a 72-year-old guy, and you're 72, you get work. Right? If they need a grandpa,
you can get work. You can do it for 50 years. You can just play different roles. But in athletics, you only get a certain window and that's it. You got to call it quits. But yeah, it's weird to see guys that like I saw like in the 70s or like in the early 80s. And they're still, you find them. Remember we talked about this with The Mandalorian on Disney Plus? About Carl Weathers is on The Mandalorian?
Yeah.
I was like, my God, I mean, he was in Rocky One. He was, right, in 1976. And here he, 2019, he's playing some guy on a planet in the Star Wars universe. But when you're an actor, man, you can do any gig anytime. You're never quite done. If you don't make it in your 20s, just try it in your 30s. See what happens. You never know. Continue to do it. Whereas if you're an athlete and you're, you know, tolling in the minor leagues and like you're 26, maybe it's time to find something else to do. Maybe. Or keep playing in the minors. Who knows? All right. So the Big 12 announced its suspensions down the line. Sylvia D'Souza got 12 games. He was suspended indefinitely by Bill Self. Now, there's a lot of call for Bill Self to keep that in place. To say, look, 12 games is a lot of games, but your team, the team that you were in control of, by the way, the team that the FBI said you didn't have control of, lack of institutional control, you can garner it back a little bit if you say, you know what, 12 games by the Big 12, but it's a wait and see for me. I'm going to go, I might even go a little longer, or he may not play again for me this entire season. I don't know if Self pulls this trigger, but I kind of hope he does. Look, this isn't just some student athletes getting into a tussle after a game. This was picking up a chair and almost using it. And by some grace of somebody getting in the way, he could have used it. And he could have used it in a way that's criminal. And it's not just, you know, breaking the laws of sportsmanship. It could have been criminal. I mean, we talked about this with Myles Garrett and Mason Rudolph. When you swing the helmet, there's a line in sports when we talk about hockey players going above and beyond just the normal fisticuffs, using their sticks or whatnot. There is this line in sports that we kind of walk where if there is a on-court, on-ice, on-field altercation, we sort of let that be in and of itself. But if you did those same things in a bar, you'd probably get arrested for assault or something. But in the context of the sports world, we kind of say, nah, it's a little bit more bubbled. I remember years ago, when I was covering the Avalanche, there was a hockey player that got hurt by Todd Bertuzzi really bad by the name of Steve Moore. And I remember there was a real debate about whether or not Todd Bertuzzi should be charged, like go to jail, because he pretty much broke the guy's neck. And then, you know, so you get into these conversations where, like, you're outraged by the action, and then you go, well, but do I really want that aspect of the world coming in to my sports world? Like, do I want an athlete who's just in a heat-of-the-moment thing, goes a little overboard in the context of the sport? They're unlikely to press charges against you. Remember, should Mason Rudolph press charges? No, they weren't going to press charges. It wasn't going to be anything like that. In this situation, D'Souza held up a chair. He didn't use it. He got stopped from using it. But I think if you're Bill Self and you're thinking, yeah, thank God. Thank God. I don't want the fallout of what would have happened if he did use it. And what if he seriously had hurt a Kansas State player beyond just missing a couple of games? What if he seriously injured somebody? What if he used it multiple times in a furious rage? But I think the larger story here is if you want to let the commissioner of your conference dictate your suspensions, fine. If you want to say it's out of my hands, it's the conference's decision, that's fine. But think about being more of a leader of your program if you say it's beyond that for me. This is my team. This is my group of kids. And I'm going to handle this the way I'm going to handle it. 12 games, fine. But for me, it's 20. Or for me, it's the full season. What kind of message would that send across your team? Maybe even across the conference that you're in charge. Remember, remember when the FBI came out and started pointing fingers at a number of institutions that they said had lack of institutional control,
They were involved in all sorts of recruiting scandals. Bill Self was on that list. And D'Souza was the player that was involved in that. Right? And nobody, I don't think there's a coach in college sports right now that wants the label lack of institutional control. It's not good for your bosses. It doesn't send a good message to your alumni. It doesn't send a good message to your boosters. Because if even if you get your team in a position to win a title or two, one thing boosters hate is when you sully the name, when you soil the name of your institution, when you take it down into the sewer through scandal or whatnot. You can win, but sometimes that stain of being a cheater or doing it the wrong way or anything else like that, they don't like that. They don't want to be a part of that. They don't want to be reminded of that from their friends and their rivals. And this is a way for Bill Self to get a little institutional control. Suspend his guys a little longer, right? For whatever, however that is. And you know what? If you want to bring him back for the Big 12 championship title tournament, but I would rather see you suspend him for the entire season and say, no, guys, this is serious. Guys, not only did you put your playing future in college in jeopardy, you put your reputation in jeopardy. You put your what is it? Where the police were involved. You don't want to get involved in that either. You put a lot of things at play, picking up a chair, getting into these fights that are out of control. So I'm going to remind you we don't clear benches around here because you guys are done playing for a while. You may think it's protecting your teammates, but I am in charge here and it's not. The NBA had to do this. The NBA had to step in and go, guys, I know you're all one uniform, but you better not leave that bench. You better stay put. Because if there's an altercation, we're going to handle it. But you know what we can't handle? 25 guys going at it. That is not going to happen. You got two or three guys, we can jump in. You got 12 guys aside, all on the floor fighting one another? No, we have nobody. We have to bring in security. We have to bring in police. We have to find a way to calm that down. The NBA had to do it. There's going to be severe penalties if you leave the bench. Self needs to do that as well. It doesn't need the conference to do it because the conference is basically setting your own punishment. I'll give you an example. When I was in school, okay, I told you before, I was a big class clown. All right. And I was kind of goofy and I was trying to be funny. And sometimes it would get me in trouble. And sometimes I'd have to go down and visit the principal. Right. And I used to have a joke because I was on pretty good terms with the principal. She was a nice lady from San Diego, by the way. And I used to joke, one kid was sitting in the chair outside the principal's office. And I walked in and I said to the kid, "You're in my seat." And he had to get up and go to another seat. But that was me. But you know what? The school could have said detention, but my parents were going to say another thing. All right. My parents didn't say, well, the school handled it. Your little funny outburst in Mr. Muzzy's math class. Right. Well, the school took care of that. My parents said something else. That's what Bill Self has to do. It's one thing for the league, the Big 12 to go, here's all the suspensions. And Bill Self go, well, there's nothing I can do. They're suspended, I guess. But it's another to say, not on my watch, not on my team. And I'm going further than that because this is serious for Kansas. I don't care what Bruce Weber does. Bruce Weber can live by the law of the Big 12. I'm fine with that. I don't care. I'm not even going to fight it. And I'm not even going to demand that he do what I do. But at Kansas, at Lawrence, with the Jayhawk program, the buck stops here and the buck stops with me telling everybody that was involved in that, that got suspended, you're not playing for a while, even longer than what that league seemed fit. Because you're playing for me. And I don't tolerate this. I think it's a message he needs to send. I really do. I think it's a message that would really resonate, especially, as I mentioned earlier, when you've already been labeled in that sort of cloud of the scandal that says, yeah, he didn't really have control of his own program. It could be just optics. Don't get me wrong. It could be, he could play that for just optics. But I also think it sends a message to his team. No, we do not clear benches. Two guys want to duke it out. We'll let them handle it. We'll let them calm that down, and then we'll deal with that afterwards. But I'm not going to have seven or eight of you
jumping into a pile that can't be controlled, especially in an area where there's fans that had to scramble for their safety. And when you have a story where the fans have to scramble for their safety, you're not doing your part. And Bill Self knows it, and I think he should really look at this situation and go, fine, but here's what I'm doing. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, that's Ron with two N's. Disagree? Agree with that? Let me know on Twitter, again, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. And again, spell Ron with two N's. Ryan Ballinger is going to join us. We're going to talk some golf as the Farmers Insurance Open gets underway at Torrey Pines. It's Tiger's season debut. What's on tap in 2020? And all that coming up next on SB Nation AM.
Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
And glad you could be with us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. With think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. You got me stumped on this one too, partner.
No, I would have been stumped on this one.
Falcon Crest?
No. We stuck with the theme. These are all early TV shows in the 80s, all around the same time A-Team was around.
Right.
This is Remington Steele.
Remington Steele. This was another rich guy
that solved
crimes.
No, actually, I thought the same thing. But
wasn't he wealthy?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Basically, the premise of the show is the lady, who I can't remember. I just looked it up and I already forgot her name. It's like Laura.
Stephanie Zimbalist, I think, yes, was her name.
But the actress, the character, Laura Holt, she's a licensed private investigator, played by Stephanie Zimbalist. Good job there.
Thank you.
She opened a detective agency under her own name, but found potential clients refused to hire a woman, no matter how qualified.
Oh.
So to solve the problem, she invented a fictitious male superior she named Remington Steele.
That was the premise of the show?
Yeah. And the way Pierce Brosnan came into the fold was, it was in the very first episode when they got together. Pierce Brosnan was a former thief and con man.
So he wasn't a rich playboy?
No. Well,
This is the first time I'm hearing this. This is wild.
I guess he played one on TV.
Well, I think in the credits he was in a tuxedo.
Yes,
and
he
I
was.
Think I only saw the credits. I couldn't watch these television
and
shows.
Then,
as
and
a
then
child.
We associated him with Bond years later. So
yeah. I thought he was a rich guy.
Yeah, well, he probably was a rich guy because he was a thief and a con man. So he wasn't your normal type of thief holding up a grocery store.
Right.
He probably, since he was a con man, he probably did like high, you know, white collar crimes.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
So he assumed the identity of Remington Steele. Behind the scenes, a power struggle ensues between Laura and Steele as to who is really in charge, while the two carry on a casual romantic relationship.
Man, these TV shows, man, I'm telling you. They just churned them out, didn't they? They just came up with an idea and just went with it.
At first, I was just sticking to cars. Like, oh, you know, I remember this show because of this car. Then I realized, like, you know what, man, there were a lot of crime shows that just did involve people who you would think were crime. I mean, we had Stuntman. You know, this one is... These two would solve crimes. One's a private investigator. The other one's a con man.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Way to go, television back in the day.
Yep.
Then cable came in and made you up your game a little bit. More of this stuff.
Now we're back to, like, we want realism. Like, the only cop shows you see are actual cops.
Well, remember, this is a really good point. There was a period of time where we just kind of were joking about where everybody solves crimes, right? Every walk of life could be a crime fighter. But then there was Hill Street Blues. And Hill Street Blues was a television show that changed that entire narrative, because Hill Street Blues said, hey, guess what? We're going to talk about cops, but we're not going to talk about cops solving a crime for an hour. We're going to talk about cops about their lives at home, right? We're going to talk about cops about their relationships, how the stress of the job changes their relationship, how the temptations of the job to take some drug money that's just lying around, things like that. You could have cops that were likable and yet very, very flawed characters. There was a lot of realism to Hill Street Blues that wasn't in all of these other cop dramas that were in the 80s. And it's funny because, you know, what what people had, and again, I was too young to really experience all that, but like the final episode of MASH, who shot JR, all of those things that were going on in the early 80s.
All those.
We are never, ever, ever going to have that again, because even when we have big events like the last episode of Game of Thrones or the last episode of Lost, those numbers are dwarfed by the amount of people that watched like the final episode of MASH.
Yeah.
MASH.
The final episode of Seinfeld.
That was probably the closest,
but that'll probably be the last one.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, these shows are big. Don't get me wrong. You have big moments. We just had one with Game of Thrones in 2019 where it felt like everybody watched, but not everybody watched.
Speaking of which, that almost made the Good, the Bad, the Dumb today, because George R. R. Martin came out and said, yeah, he originally wanted the final season of Game of Thrones to be a movie trilogy.
Oh, wow. That'd have been wild.
Yeah.
Not bad.
But I think about it, I was like, I didn't know which direction to go. That, you know, did HBO blow it, or did HBO miss a golden opportunity, or would that have been just a terrible idea? Given what we've seen in that final season.
I remember when I was in a media class, when I was in journalism school, we would talk about television as a medium, talk about television as a pop culture influencer. And it was a segment of the class that was based on that. And I'll never forget, my professor said, back in 1981, if you went to a bus stop and there were 10 people at the bus stop, all different walks of life, didn't matter, old, new, black, white, whatever, 5 people at that bus stop watched the last episode of MASH at least. 50% of the population watched the final episode of MASH. And I remember thinking that was way too big. But he's like, of all the viewing adults, television adults. And I was like, that was a number I just didn't, I mean, in the 90s when I was going to college, that didn't seem possible, that you could have, you know, half of the viewing audience tune into one television show. That seemed ridiculous to me, right? Because my cable had, at that time, like 50 channels. But yeah, when you had 3 channels and one was super popular and shut everything down, that's what you get. Speaking of big television shows, Ron, the Super Bowl is coming up down in Miami, Super Bowl 54. And you know what people do when they go to Super Bowl parties? They overeat. And they overeat a lot. Because you and I know we're going to be doing that.
Oh, I'm planning on it.
Plan on it. Whether it's pizza, wings, whatever's on the buffet, chili, whatever you're going to consume.
Maybe, you know what? Maybe it's wings on pizza.
Maybe it's wings on pizza. Smothering in buffalo sauce. Who knows? All the chips galore. You could get an upset stomach. I've had it. You've had it. That's why you got to use Nauzene. It will cure your upset stomach and nausea. It's quick dissolving chewable tablets. Also wild cherry flavor. I like things that are flavored cherries, but I don't like cherries. Does that make sense?
No.
Give me cherry lifesavers. Give me cherry medicine, cherry Nauzene. But I don't like maraschino cherries. Like actual cherries.
You don't like a cherry on top of your
I don't like it. No. I've always, for my whole life, I've always given that cherry to someone else.
You know, it takes some Nauzene, then you power down a bunch of Sundays.
I could power down a bunch of Sundays. My wife, every time we've gotten Sundays, my wife automatically takes the cherry on top. She goes, I know you won't eat this, so I'm going to eat this for you. I go, okay, because I don't eat it. But I like wild cherry everything, gum. I like everything. I love that flavor. Nauzene's formative formula quickly relieves stomach discomfort from overindulging, non-drowsy, no aspirin or other side effects like caffeine, no chalky medicinal flavor or bitter aftertaste, and available in chewable tablets. So remember, for the big game party, get Nauzene. All right, Ryan Balogie is going to join us in a couple of minutes talking some golf with Tiger coming back.
I got a quick one for you.
Sure.
Top 10 highest rated series finales of all time.
Where does Lost rank? That was like 10 years ago.
Not on there.
Not on the list.
Not on the list.
What's the MASH would be the number one.
I'll go really quick. Number 10, okay. Family Ties.
Okay.
All right.
80s.
Yep. Number 9, All in the Family. All in the Family pulled in 17.8% of the U.S. population.
Wow, no kidding.
No numbers were given for Family Ties. Cosby Show pulled in 17.3%.
All right.
Magnum
Very good.
P.I. I was surprised to see that.
Oh, when they found out Higgins was...
Spoiler alert!
No, well, yeah, shoot. Robin Masters was really Higgins the whole time. That's right.
Yeah. That was 20.7% of the population. Friends.
Okay, that was another one. That was a big deal.
Comes in at number 6. That was only 17.9%. Ahead of Seinfeld, 27.7%. Let's see, The Fugitive. Because obviously you got to figure out the ending, 39.3. Number 3 was Cheers. Number 2, Roots, Part 8.
Very good. Roots,
and number
very
one,
powerful.
MASH, 53.5%.
It was even bigger than my professor even told me. 53% of the viewing audience watched the last episode of MASH. That's absolutely nuts. SB Nation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, SB Nation Radio, SB Nation AM. Again on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver, Ron with two N's. Ryan Ballinger set to join us. We'll talk some golf with him. Is this Airwolf? Or is this Blue Thunder? I feel like this is a helicopter one.
Airwolf.
It's Airwolf. All right, very good. I figured it out. Sometimes these just catch your memory, and that's it. Ryan Ballinger, we'll get him in just a couple of minutes as the golf season really kicks into form. Now that the players of the PGA Tour is in Southern California, they'll be at Torrey Pines for the Farmers Insurance Open today. It is the season debut of Tiger Woods. Phil Mickelson at 49 years old, also making a season debut. Feels like he can win, hitting the ball pretty well in practice and warm-ups and whatnot. Phil Mickelson was on Twitter the other day, and because he's 49, he's going to turn 50 this year at the U.S. Open. And, you know, I'm getting older too, and I'm in my 40s, and Mickelson has been on this health kick, which is really crazy because, you know, look, when you're rich and you can hire trainers and whatnot, there's really no reason to get all fat and out of shape when you're a professional athlete. But Mickelson was seen doing these like yoga poses at his age. I'm not kidding when I tell you, I was actually jealous. Now, not from the wealth and the fame and the fact that he can play golf a million times greater than me. But the fact that he could put like his leg on the back of his back at 49 years old, I'm at an age, and I kid you not, when I drop something, I go, oh God, I got to go bend down and pick that up. Like I don't know. Everything aches. I sit in a chair too long. My feet fall asleep. And Mickelson's done a great job. I mean, he really has done a great job of staying in shape, getting limber. He's got to compete. He's got to be able to hit the ball 320 yards now at 49 years old. And he could still win out there. He still could be competitive out there. But of course, all the eyes are on Tiger. Of course. Tiger's the defending Masters champion. And Torrey Pines is a place he's won before. He's had success on that course his entire life, not just professional career. Right? Grew up playing on that course. But at the same, and this is also where the place where he won the U.S. Open in 2008, the last major he won before winning the Masters last year. But also, Jordan Spieth is going to be in the field. And Jordan Spieth's in the middle of a slump. He didn't make the President's Cup team. So he's going to be looking to get his game in ready for 2020. This is when I feel like it kicks off. I think there's a champions tournament to start the season, and it's a very small field. And then the tour goes to another Hawaiian event a lot of players don't go to. And then it gets to Torrey Pines, and that's when you see guys really, all right, we're now kicking into the West Coast swing. But golf with Tiger is just better. That's the way it is. And I've said this for many times. There's a young guys aspect to this sport, right? There was a time where it was Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth. And don't get me wrong, they still are. And Rory McIlroy and, you know, Patrick Reed and Ricky Fowler and, you know, all the young guys that were taking the sport by storm. And I would hear guys say a lot, well, the sport's in good hands. Don't worry, the sport's in good hands. And I always go, really? Like, be honest. Don't just say that to say that because the guys are good and they're winning and they're 22 and they're major champions. Don't just say that to say that. Is it really back? And the answer is no. The answer was no. As good as Jordan Spieth was and is, as good as Rory is, as good as Justin Thomas is, there's only one guy that moves the needle in the direction you really want your sport to go. Right? NASCAR, for all of its fans, needed Jeff Gordon. The golf world needed Tiger Woods. It took the sport to another place. It made the sport where people wanted to watch it even if they hated watching it because they thought it was boring, they still watch it. Ryan Ballinger joins us as we get ready for the Farmers Insurance Assurance Open. He's from Golf News Net. Always good having Ryan on. How are you, Ryan?
Good, Tony. How are you?
2020, Tiger Woods, the young guns are still young. What are you looking at in terms of 2020, especially this tournament? What does it offer a guy like Woods? What does it offer a guy like Jordan Spieth? An opportunity to get on the right track, or for some guys, do they not play this well?
I think that this is a kind of a controversial course in that sense. I mean, Torrey Pines is difficult, especially the South course. It's a two-course format. We have a number of those in a row. We had one last week, have one this week. We have one with Pebble Beach. And they're not easy formats. They're not easy tournaments to win. And so they're not necessarily the best preparation for anything. And I don't even know if they're necessarily the best marker of where your game is. But Tiger is a creature of habit. This is where he wants to start his year. This is where he's pretty much started his year for 20 years. And so he's going to try to get into a pathway to playing himself up for the Masters. And so that's what starts this week. I think it's a measuring stick of where his game is. He's won here 8 times, so he feels he plays places where he's been successful. For other guys, you know, John Rahm's of the world, who are probably ready to have a breakout year, they're trying to put a notch on the board that either for Tiger or for the rest of their peers, that they're going to be someone to mess with this year.
When Tiger won the Masters, obviously people enjoyed it and loved it, and it brought back all the memories of the times he had done it before. But there was a new expectation bar where before we were like, could Tiger ever win again? Now it was, could he win multiple majors? Well, he didn't, and he didn't really play well in the rest of the majors. But when you look back on 2019 for Tiger, maybe the big highlight was the Masters, but what was the overall takeaway from his season?
I think in year two, it's trying to figure out, okay, year one was about figuring out, are you healthy enough to play a full PGA Tour schedule, and can you contend, and what is your game like? And then by the end of the season to the Tour Championship, he figured out it was good enough and that he could win again. Last year was, all right, can you do it in the biggest stage? All right, we can do that. And then now it's, okay, in year three or season three, I guess, since we're now in wraparound seasons, do you have the stamina to win multiple times and be great throughout the year? And that was the one thing he didn't do very well last season after winning the Masters. Now, he admitted he had kind of a knee issue, had an arthroscopic procedure, but he had a really hard time keeping up with the schedule of someone who is the sixth or fifth best ranked player in the world. And I think he tried to do a little too much too soon. And this year he's going to have to kind of dial it in to where he needs to be. So I think that's the question mark is, can he, like you said, can he go back and win a major championship on a golf course like Wingfoot that's exacting and difficult and going to take a lot out of you? Or do you just feel comfortable winning at places you've demolished in the past?
I feel just by watching him, and I don't study him or watch him as closely as like you or other golf media members, I see a different Tiger in personality. Is that true? Is he more loose as his age, as a dad, as a guy who went through what he went through? Because I just felt like he was pretty stoic and individual, and now I feel like he's bonding a little more, he's open a little more.
I think with other PGA Tour players, in a lot of cases, he kind of opened up a little bit more than maybe we had seen publicly, not necessarily when he was at the peak of his powers, but I think he kind of embraced and appreciated the fact that this next generation has obviously turned to him for advice, and he's been willing to give it. He's been willing to mentor a number of guys. I think he's appreciated that. And I think that what he has gone through surgically, personally, to get back to this point, to effectively be the best player in the world, I think that gave him a whole new appreciation for what he had accomplished and what he can still accomplish. And I think that means a whole lot to him. So you do see it more publicly. You see him willing to be a dad, willing to be a human being, as opposed to just being this robot guy that kills all of his peers. I think he's realized that eventually the sun is going to set on this, and that he can leave maybe things a little bit better than he found them.
The talk about Jordan Spieth coming in, and especially 2020, is can he end the slump? Ryan, what kind of slump is he in? What is he doing wrong?
Well, I mean, he had one of the best putting seasons of his career last year, which is pretty hard to believe after 2015. But
yeah,
where he struggles is driving the golf ball. I mean, he's catastrophically bad at it. He hits maybe 50% of his fairways. He doesn't hit it nearly as far as some of his peers. And so he's kind of double double screwed, basically. If you don't put the ball in the fairway and you're in the rough, you're hitting with a longer club and you're putting less spin on it. It puts pressure on all assets of your game. And even if your putting's great like it has been, at some point you're going to break down. And until he figures out just getting off the tee, that's going to be a challenge for him. He has played very well on Thursdays and Fridays for the last couple of years. And then he gets to the weekend and just panics. And against better competition, he doesn't gain strokes. So it's a little bit of it's a cat and mouse game. What are you trying to solve? Are you okay with driving it poorly, but you just need something psychologically to get past Saturday and Sunday? Or is it something bigger at play there? I don't think he even really knows the answer at this point, but he keeps looking for answers, and it's going to be 3 years since his last win in July if he doesn't get there by then. I mean, that's kind of hard to fathom for a guy that has three major championships and had the couple of seasons that he had early in his career.
Do you see, I mean, I don't want to make big prognostications on a guy's career, but predictions on a guy's career, but this sounds like a pressure could build upon itself and upon himself, and then he becomes whatever happened to Jordan Spieth.
That's completely possible. I mean, I don't think that's even a controversial point of view anymore. At a certain point, I mean, you start to lose distance. You start to lose confidence. You can't go five seasons without a win and be a world-class player.
Right.
I mean, we talk about Rory going 5 years without a major, and he's obviously one of the best players in the world. But if you go 5 years without even just winning anything, I think you start to get a lot more questions than you have answers for.
Phil Mickelson, I was just talking about this video I saw of Mickelson with these yoga poses. He looks in shape. It's amazing to me that this guy is putting his leg on his back at 49 years old. But realistically, can Phil win on today's tour? Can he win at 49 years old with all of the young guys and all of the talent that's out there? Does he still have the game that can win a tournament?
I think maybe a one-off basis he can do it, but I mean, right now he's in the 80s in the official world golf ranking. He's not hitting. He's kind of got the same problem Jordan Spieth does. He doesn't hit a lot of fairways. He's hitting as long as he's ever hit it, which is great. Except if you're hitting from the middle of the woods, it doesn't really do you a whole lot of good.
Sure.
And I think he's kind of entered this. I call it a midlife crisis of sorts, where he's capable, but he doesn't seem interested in doing the things that you have to do to win golf tournaments. He wants to play golf his way, as he always has. And he wants to win his way, as he always has. But he's different. He's 49, and that just is not the same thing to do at that stage of his career, and I don't feel he's willing to accept.
Ryan, great here stuff there, as always. Go ahead.
You know, for 1 week here and there, it works perfectly. But, generally speaking, I think he's going to struggle.
Ryan, always great talking to you, my friend. Really appreciate it. And have fun with the West Coast swing on the PGA Tour. We'll catch up with you down the road.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it.
You got it. Ryan Ballinger, Golf News Net, talking some golf. Tiger Woods making his 2020 season debut, among some other guys, including the struggling Jordan Spieth. That would be weird if we actually had a where are they now, like Jordan Spieth just kind of bopping at your local tournament. Like at one point looked like he was going to take over the golf world, but he's right, man. When you don't hit can you imagine the pressure of being 24, 26, 27 years old and realizing at the youngest age I can be, at the most athletic I'm going to be, I can't hit the ball as far as others by a mile. I can't hit as far and I can't hit it as accurate. So when I'm not hitting the fairway, I'm hitting four or five irons when everybody else is hitting wedges. And when I'm in the fairway, I'm hitting four or five irons when everybody else is hitting. You'd probably lose your mind on what you'd have to do just to gain 1 yard, 2 yards, 3 yards, 5 extra yards on the tee. Hey, with basketball season and, of course, the big game coming up, all in full swing, it's time to get in with our exclusive sports betting partner, BetOnline. Sign up today, receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. You can start betting college and professional sports, like every spread, every total, every winner or loser, and get those wild proposition bets down. Get the fastest to market odds, updates, and payouts with the new sportsbook partners, BetOnline. Head over to the website today. Use your mobile device. You can use the promo code SBNation55 to receive your 50% welcome bonus. Bet online, your online sportsbook experts. It's SBNation AM.
It's Thursday, which means it's Throwback Thursday on SB Nation AM. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
This hour of SB Nation Radio, presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. The greatest crime-fighting duo in the early 80s television. Ralph. He couldn't fly with the suit because he lost the instruction manual.
God, it was fantastic.
That's the best.
Hey, but he was able to solve a crime within an hour.
Absolutely. I loved it when the FBI agent, what was his name, Bill, on the show?
You think so?
I think it was Bill. Bill would go, "Go get him, Ralph!" And Ralph would just throwing his arms, flailing in the sky. Well, covering his face while he crashed into a barn.
I remember watching that for the first time going, is this the most realistic superhero show ever?
Oh, of course. Aliens came down, gave you a suit, said, here's what you can do with it, and then you lose it, and then you're just figuring it out as you go. Like, there was one episode where he figured out he could move things with his mind, and he went to a casino and was moving the roulette ball. That was great. They had a really creepy episode about World War III. Where Ralph had to go push a missile back into the silo. He actually flew on top of the missile and pushed it back into the silo. But it was creepy because there was this dead soldier that would appear as they would be driving down some dark California highway desert. Yeah. He kept appearing as like they would pass him and then he would show up again and they would show up again. And he was a zombie and he spoke in the alien's voice. And that was like for a little kid, that was really, really creepy. Really
God,
creepy.
It was fantastic, though.
It was great. It was great. So, by the way, the moral of the story is, if you do get a super suit from an alien being, don't lose the instruction manual. It's very, very important. Keep it in the drawer where you keep all the other instruction manuals, like for your KitchenAid.